probably get lots of these things through the letterbox. This is a prayer letter from somebody that Julie and I have known for probably 30 years. He used to be in Julie's first job when she was teaching RE in a massive comprehensive in West Yorkshire. Roger Carswell was her head of department, and he packed it all in to become a full-time evangelist. And we get his letter. He's now head of something called the Fellowship of Evangelists, quite a few of them now, including Nick Howard, the son of Michael Howard, the famous politician and liberal Jew. And he's part of this small group of evangelists as well. But the reason for mentioning this is that if I were to read this out, and there's probably four pages of it, so it would take too long. But if I was to read it out, it would be surprisingly similar to chapter 16 of 1 Corinthians. And there's a very strong sense in a modern-day prayer letter of all sorts of things. The sense of being in something together. The sense of building the kingdom throughout a geographical area by spreading the word. The sense of making sure you get the fundamentals right. And also there's a lot in here about the practical organisation, about people, about travel, about successes and about struggles. So Roger's always talking about how well prepared a church was that he did a mission at, or how much of a struggle it was at a university mission. So he shares these things in his letter. And it seemed to me that 1 Corinthians chapter 16, being the end of this letter, is so authentic by the personal details that come out of it. It is exactly how somebody would write. And Paul says at the end, I'm signing this in my own hand. It was a real letter to real people. But I don't really want to spend the time talking about the travel, the arrangements, the giving. At St. John's, I've already spoken twice about giving, and I'm not going to do it a third time. So I want to concentrate on this pithy little synopsis of what Paul was about that occurs in verse 13 and 14, where he says this, be on your guard, stand firm in the faith, be men of courage. Obviously that means women as well. Be men and women of courage. Be strong. Do everything in love. And in a way, it's odd that Paul should mention that in chapter 16, because he's already said something very, very similar at the end of 15, when he says in verse 58, therefore, my dear brothers, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labour in the Lord is not in vain. In a way, these verses are like an encapsulated summary of what will win. And Peter Farley Moore has used this sporting analogy in all of Corinthians. And that's why he gave, if you read your 4 months at a glance, you will see that this is headed debrief and future plans. And it's like the manager of the sporting endeavour is running over things. And it seems to me that, and I'm sorry to use a footballing analogy because there might be a lot of people here who don't understand footballing analogy, but it seems to me that in a way what Paul is doing is saying, like a football manager says to his team, make sure you're first to the second ball. Now, for those of you who don't play football, that may sound like a stupid thing to say, make sure you're first to the second ball. All that means is this. When the 10 outfield players are playing, they tackle and they collide. All of that is sort of organised because you can see the player and he's got the ball, so you tackle him. But when the tackle occurs, probably 50% of the time, the ball runs free into somewhere you can't anticipate. And that's what this expression is to do with, make sure you're first to the second ball, because you can observe football matches, and the team that is most successful are the team who are fastest to the ball when it's free, when it's running free, because they're fitter, because they want to win more, and because they're more pumped up. And the more that you that the team gets to this is first to the second ball, the more successful they are. It's like it's not a specific thing. It's not like saying you, Michael, when Frederick goes to the right and passes the ball over, make sure you get your head on it between those. It's not a specific thing. It's like a general quick fire encapsulated advice on how to win. If you want to win and you want to know about it in a sentence, you want to know about it in a sentence that will always help. This is one of them. So let's go to the verses and see what Paul says. Be on your guard, stand firm in the faith, be men of courage, be strong, do everything in love. So there's this very strong sense of standing firm. You can almost feel as if Paul's body was going rigid when he said it, standing firm. Very, very similar, if you want to check with chapter 6 of Ephesians, the stuff to do with the whole armour of God. It's all to do with standing firm. You're in the arena. You need the armour. You need to be strong. But of course, there's a bit of a problem with Christians being strong, isn't there? Because we're supposed to not rely on ourselves. We're supposed to be empty and reliant upon God. So how can Paul ask his audience to be strong? In fact, in chapter 1, verse 28, he's already said in this letter, God has chosen what is weak. God's chosen what is weak to confuse the strong, to confuse what is strong. There's a strong sense in Christian circles that we must acknowledge that we are weak and that we cannot rely upon our own strength. So what does this mean? How can he put such an emphasis on standing firm and being strong? Well, I think the answer is that being strong is not our natural state. It isn't our natural state. It's what we are called to be. Being strong in this way is an act of obedience. It's acknowledging that God has chosen what is weak. That is what we are. We are the weak, and he has chosen us to confuse what is strong. We are called in a way, we are chosen, and we must obey. That is the answer to the conundrum. And I've tried to put a few thoughts down as to what it might mean to stand firm as a Christian, what this calling might be. What are we called to be? What are we called to do? And the first thing is this. Maybe we're called to lives of integrity. Now, for integrity, you might think that's an odd word to use, but I'm using integrity to cover all those things in verse 13. Being on our guard, standing firm, being people of courage and being strong. That he wants lives of integrity. Now, people notice integrity. They really do, because it is rare. You might think that's a provocative thing to say, but integrity is rare and people do notice it. Some time ago, the Spellmans ran the church weekend away, and I remember a definition of leadership that was given on the St. John's weekend away, which was leadership consists of organisation and vision allied to courage. And they said at the time that courage is the one that everybody misses, and courage is the one that confuses people. That leadership should involve courage. But actually, courage is absolutely at the centre of leadership. Because to organise things is only one thing, is to manage them and to organise them. To be able to see the future and to see things that nobody else can see is an additional thing. But to have courage as well as those things is an extra thing. Now, Paul is saying, he uses that word. He uses in verse 13, be people of courage. Now, just to use an illustration about the credit crunch. Now, we all know that terrible things are happening round us. Terrible things are happening in the world. We probably also acknowledge that very many of us, that's us, not bankers and Fred Goodwin and the people that we are putting on the public pillory, but very many people saw in months and years gone by that what was happening was not healthy, was not real, that it was empty. And some people might even have seen that it was wicked. The problem being we didn't do anything about it. It isn't, and this is where courage comes in, it isn't good enough to say, this isn't healthy, this isn't real, this isn't going anywhere. It isn't enough on this definition. Courage means that you say, this isn't healthy and I'm not having any of it. Courage means this isn't real and I'm going to go somewhere else, which I believe to be real. And I'm going to suffer the consequences. I mean, this is where I would put Fred Goodwin back on in the stocks, because that is the real problem. He led. He did lead. But he hasn't suffered any consequences of taking people to the wrong place. And courage and lives of integrity could be important. We're not asked to say, I'm not going there, and to take ourselves into some sort of obscure wilderness, to somewhere that's irrelevant. But we're asked to have courage and to say, this isn't real, it's not healthy, it's not good, and I am going to opt for, that is opt with my feet, with my family, with my employment, with my income, for a different alternative. This comes to the second thing. Of course, what we're talking about is not a business. It's not a business. We're not talking about any old project. We're talking about the most important project that there is. This comes to the second point. I think that what Paul's recommending is also not just lives of integrity, but lives of mission. And he mentions this in both verses, both 13 and 58, because he doesn't just say stand firm. He says stand firm in the faith. There's a point to it. Stand firm in the faith. Verse 58, give yourselves fully to what? Give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labour in the Lord is not in vain. So in this standing firm, there is something about mission. It's standing firm in the faith. Now, I've used Nelson Mandela as an illustration before. I'm going to use him again. Nelson Mandela said, the ANC is not a political party, it's my life. And that is the sort of concept of a big overriding cause that Paul is recommending here. You know, there are all sorts of things that we're engaged in, all sorts of things that we're doing. But the big project is to do with the kingdom of God. It's to do with building this thing, like Paul and Apollos and the other people were building it throughout the Mediterranean world. The big thing to build. I am trying to build a business, and I've built a business before. And there are parallels between building a business and being engaged in the kingdom. You have got to get your message out there. If you do that, you'd employ somebody like Jeff. It's a similar thing in some ways. But the big thing is this mission. And I think sometimes, I'm just going to give one throwaway comment. Sometimes when we think about our friends and our colleagues at work, sometimes we are a bit too restricted in how we think about them. We think about too much about our status. And we think about our view of their need. So we tend to say, when we're thinking about our friends, we say, I am not, ... You can fill in your own blank. You know, I am not high enough up my career path or this organization to bring the gospel to somebody who's my line manager or above my line manager. I am not the most well-liked part of my family, therefore I'm going to stay quiet when I'm in my family. I am not. We think too much about our status. We think too much about them. They seem to be perfectly happy, we say to ourselves. You see how the devil uses our minds to prevent mission. And we should rather respond more in obedience and trust. Maybe this is what Paul was trying to reassure people about in verse 58. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord. Give yourselves to that work. Your labor isn't in vain. It's not to do with your perception of who you are or their need. Your labor is not in vain. Mission is at the core. So lives of integrity, lives of mission. The third thing is lives of warmth. And of course I'm referring to verse 14, do everything in love. Lives of warmth. The doing of everything in love. Now I am not going to talk about love to St. John's, because in my humble opinion, St. John's is good with warm. I think St. John's is good at warm. And I've been here over 20 years, and it's always been the same. St. John's is good. And I don't know anything about it, and you would see through me straight away if I tried to lecture you on it. So let me just say something about what Paul might be meaning, do everything with love. I want to use a sort of double illustration, an illustration of the cross. But I want to use as an illustration of the cross something I learnt from community and urban regeneration. In urban regeneration, you're often in a room full of people who don't like the fact that somebody's cutting cars into two halves with oxyacetylene torches outside their home. They don't like the language that the children use to them when they walk out the front door. And they don't like the graffiti on every street corner. So you're in a meeting, you're talking about what can be done. And about halfway through, somebody says, does anybody care enough to do anything? You know, we're talking, but does anybody care enough to actually do anything? And there's like a magical moment when people are looking at each other and they're thinking, I don't think you are, and I'm certain I'm not. Because caring costs. And the big question is, does anybody care enough to do something? Now, the cross is not the answer to the meaning of life in a sort of philosophical, cold, meaningless way. I mean, it is the answer to the meaning of life. But the cross is the answer to that question. Does anybody care enough? That's what the cross is the answer to. Fundamentally, does anybody care enough? It's not to do with love in a nebulous or cold way. It's all to do with warmth. It's to do with warmth and action. Does anybody care enough to do something? The other question that the cross answers is this. Does anybody rate me? Now that might seem like I'm not asking the question for me, I'm asking the question for everybody. Does anybody rate you? Does anybody rate me? And it's a complicated question, because What I'm talking about is so fundamental, very few people will ask themselves this question because the risk of getting the answer no. But does anybody rate me not for what I give or for what I do or even for what I share with them? Does anybody just like me? Now, the cross is not a notion floating in the ether. It is the practical answer to the deepest and most fundamental questions about whether we have a pulse or should have a pulse. Does anybody care enough? Does anybody rate me? Love is always in action. And I'm not just making that up. It is actually in verse 14 because the expression is do everything. Do everything in love. Not love, do everything in love. So why did Paul give this little, why did he say make sure you're first to the second ball? What is that to do with? Well, maybe he's recommending a life of obedience where our lives are lives of integrity, lives of mission, and lives of warmth. Or another way possibly of saying it is the kingdom means having strength and conviction, not to meaningless isolation, but to health. The strength and conviction to opt for health and not watch everything fall apart and do nothing. Not working to protect our lifestyle, although we probably will do that as well. Not working to protect our lifestyle, but being lost in the world's greatest project. It's never a cold idea. It's always a warm action.